I don't think there's a human being alive that doesn't experience anger at least once throughout the course of a week. In fact, I think I could safely say for most people it's once in the course of a day at least. And anger is another one of these emotions. I'll give a little bit of the background that I gave last week for those of you who may not have been here, because there is a direct working and an interrelationship between various human emotions, and particularly fear and anger. And if you recall last week, I pointed out that what the psychologists tell us is that there are certain things that precipitate fear. In other words, fear is a natural response to an outside stimuli, just like any one-celled animal or the lower order of animals react automatically to set stimuli. They have been programmed almost like robots to act in a certain way for their self-preservation and propagation and so forth. And human beings really are much the same way, except that they're much more complicated, and there is the agency of will and intellect that enters in. But nevertheless, when it comes to the emotion of anger, there are specific definite things that generate this emotion in the human being, and let's say emotion or the feeling or the expression of anger is a direct result of something that caused it. Now, as I stated last week, life would indeed be dull if we didn't experience emotions. Think of what it would be like if you had to go through your entire life without experiencing love or joy or happiness or various other emotions. The only problem is, though, that emotions that are uncontrolled and emotions that run amok and emotions that are not properly handled can become one of the worst handicaps and curses that human beings can experience. So therefore, what I want to emphasize today in the title, as you recall, How to Control Anger, I do not mean to imply by that it's wrong to be angry and that human beings should never experience anger and that anger in itself is necessarily sinful or evil. It's like every other emotion and every other thing that God has given us, it has to be used properly, justly, and wisely. Now, if you would look up a dictionary definition of the word anger, it would tell you, now we're talking in terms of what its final end result is, because like every other human emotion, there are many, many nuances and shades of these things as they're expressed and interpreted through the circumstance it has generated, as well as the result of our own background and how we look on things, our overall view and viewpoint of life. There are many, many forms and nuances and shades of interpretation and shades of experience in this thing of anger. But carrying it to its ultimate, of course, it usually ends up in violence. And so the dictionary will tell us that emotion is the emotion of anger is the impulse to fight or the impulse to destroy or kill. Now that's what generates its ultimate. In other words, it can be an emotion that can be very destructive, very, very damaging, very harmful, and in many cases, irrevocable in what it accomplishes and what it does. Now, as I mentioned last week, fear is the prospect of certain outside stimuli. They can be, of course, the result of, fear can be the result of an actual physical act or activity being perpetrated upon you to generate it. But more than likely, it is, as the psychologists tell us, the prospect of these things that generate fear, because fear is often generated before the event actually happens. Anger, strange as it may seem, is caused by the same three stimuli as fear, only in the case of fear, it's generated by the prospect of it, whereas in the case of anger, it's generated by the actual participation in these three things. These three things, as I pointed out to you last week, were number one, harm. You recall I gave the example of driving down the highway in an automobile and a near crash generates the interpretation of harm, which in turn generates fear usually after it happens. But it also generates anger. Anytime there is the threat of harm to you directly or for that matter, as the psychologist will tell you, to any extension of the empirical self, which can mean your children, your wife, your family, your brother, your sister, your home, your property, your country, your nation, your beliefs, anything that is an extension of the empirical self, if there is a threat of harm to it, or if there is a harm to it, then it generates anger. It's a specific emotion generated by harm. Now, in addition, frustration is a major cause of anger. I'm going to point out, I should perhaps do it right now, in case I'd fail to do so later, but what we find out is that the two other facets of stimuli that generate anger, meaning frustration, and then this third thing I pointed out last week, what is called the survival syndrome, those two particular causes, and I say I'm using those terms very broadly because within each one of these categories could be many, many different things that fall within it that generate it, but in these two particular categories here, frustration or survival, the real motivating fact behind it is either human selfishness, generally your selfishness, although it can be the other person's selfishness, and vanity, human vanity. Harm would be a little bit different if we're thinking in terms of a direct physical confrontation that comes to you as a result of no fault of your own. But these other two, frustration and survival, as we'll see, if I'll remember to say this later on, are generally motivated because of a vanity and a selfishness that is within each one of us. So anger can be a very, very devastating and disastrous emotion if it is not properly controlled. On the other hand, it can serve as a motivating factor for many things that can turn out good if it is used properly and wisely. So it behooves each one of us, if we're trying to grow in grace and in knowledge and grow spiritually, to learn to control anger and to use it wisely and to use it properly. Now let's notice the very first example in the Bible of anger. And I think we can certainly say that most likely all three of these major categories were involved in this. Certainly two of them were. That should be without any shadow of doubt. But this is the example of Cain and Abel, and you'll remember as we read here in Genesis 4. Verse number 4, Abel he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof, and the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering. But unto Cain and to his offering he had not respect. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. So what do we have here? We have the very first example in the entirety of the Bible of a man who failed to control his emotions. Now, I'm going to point out here that God did not condemn him for having that emotion, because God had placed it in him, as he has placed emotions in every one of us. But what God was telling him to do, as we'll see in just a moment, was that he recognized the fact that he had this emotion within him, but he must learn to control it. So the Lord said to him, Cain, why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen? So he was angry and he was disgusted and he was depressed. He was in a wrong attitude. He was in a foul spirit in general, but he failed to look at himself to see what the cause of it was. That's why God said to him. God's telling him in this next verse, he's saying, look, Cain, I am not a respecter of persons because I gave respect to Abel's offering. You would get the same kind of respect if you would properly follow the orders and instruction you had been given. So I said, if you do well, shall not you be accepted? And if you do not well, sin lieth at the door. And then as the other translations say, its desire is for you, but you must master it. So what he was really telling Cain was here that he had placed within him, as he is placed within all human beings, these emotions. But these emotions, if they're uncontrolled and they run amok, will cause all kinds of damage and they'll end up ruling the man. But you as a man must learn to master these things. Now we know the final consequence of Cain's instruction. The end result of his wrong spirit and his foul attitude was that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and slew him. This was the end result of anger. This was the end result of an uncontrolled emotion. The first crime and the first murder. The first murder was perpetrated on the earth because of a man who did not control his emotions. He let anger get the best of him. So this gives you an example here of how damaging and harmful human emotions, uncontrolled human emotions can be. And I should also call to your attention here, what was it that upset Cain? All right, God did not accept his offering, so no doubt he felt frustrated. Here he had gone to all this effort and this labor, to have this offering accepted, and God had turned him down. So there was a frustration there. What is frustration? It is an emotional feeling that one goes through when his goals or his purposes or his efforts have not been realized. For example, as I pointed out last week, if you're driving in your automobile and you are in a hurry to go somewhere and you get caught in a traffic jam, what's the first emotion that hits you? Frustration, is it not? So it is a direct consequence of being thwarted, unable to attain a goal or to reach some kind of a purpose. And as I stated earlier, frustration is generally motivated by human selfishness, in this case your own selfishness, or your own vanity. And then, of course, the next aspect that involved Cain here was the matter of this, what we call the survival syndrome. In other words, if you fail to survive in your own eyes as an individual, or as a person, or as a somebody, or as somebody with prestige, or somebody being looked up to, and that is damaged and harmed, then anger sets in. Usually when people become angry at other people over words that are spoken back and forth, it usually involves this aspect here of survival, either survival or frustration, because as I stated earlier, it can be interpreted as harm too, because if somebody says something against you and you feel it's harmful for you, then you're looking at harm, you're looking at frustration, and you're also looking at this thing as survival. So all three of these could well have affected Cain. But it does illustrate that these three broad general areas are what affect people in their emotional interpretation of what happens. And I should say this, I'm going to emphasize two things in this sermon today, and this is one thing I want to emphasize. If you gain nothing else out of this sermon, I think there's one other point that is more important than this, but this is very important. If you don't gain any other thing but this thing, gain this, will you? And that is, when you become angry from now on, sit down afterward when you're able to think and ask yourself why you became angry. Try to analyze what caused you to become angry. And you will see invariably it will fall in one of these three categories. Two of them primarily generated by selfishness and vanity, the other self-preservation. But it will give you, I think, a working opportunity to analyze yourself more carefully and to see why you become angry. Now, we read here in the book of Galatians that anger is a part of human nature. What do we read here in Galatians 5, verse number 20? You see, we read here in verse 19, "Now the works of the flesh are manifest," and it goes on to enumerate a number of things that are the work of the flesh. And what do you read here in verse number 20, about the middle of the verse? One of these characteristics is what? Wrath. What's wrath? It's anger. So you see, anger is one of the natural consequences of being born into the flesh as a human being. And when God told Cain that he knew that he had this within him, you'll notice that God did not condemn him for becoming angry. God merely corrected him for his failure to comply with what he had already been told, and in turn told him he recognized that he had this nature within him and he had to learn to master it. So it behooves all of us as human beings to recognize this emotion of anger that we have within ourselves and then to learn to control it. Now, there is a vivid example here in the book of Genesis of what happened to some individuals because they failed to control their anger. There are many Bible examples that we could refer to. I'm sure that if we went into a study of anger itself, we'd find many, many examples where people did not control their anger properly. But here in the case of Genesis, in Genesis the 49th chapter, in the case of the two sons of Israel, what do we read about them? Well, we pick it up here in verse number 5. "Simeon and Levi are brethren, instruments of cruelty are in their habitations." In other words, probably weapons. They love weapons and they love to fight. They have this inclination within them. "O my soul, come not thou into their secret, unto their assembly. Mine honor, be not thou united. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they digged down a wall. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel." So These two tribes were never allowed to have their own individuality and to become separate nations within the household of Israel, because God saw within them a bloodthirsty characteristic, an uncontrolled anger, that if they lost control of their temper, then they were going to misuse this emotion. The incident was precipitated back in Genesis, the 34th chapter, as you'll recall. I will not read the whole incident to you. You can check it later if you care to. But this was when Dinah, their sister, Jacob's daughter, was defiled by this Shechem. And in subterfuge, they led these people to believe, Shechem's father Hamar, as well as Shechem and the entire village, they led them to believe that, all right, they would overlook it if they would be circumcised and become as the children of Israel. And so we read in verse 24, and unto Hamor and unto Shechem his son hearkened all that went out of the gate of the city, and every male was circumcised, all that went out of the gate of his city. And it came to pass on the third day when they were sore. Probably the Bible means very sore. Because most male adults, if they are circumcised as an adult, usually end up in the hospital about 3 weeks. It is such a painful, excruciating experience to go through. And I can guarantee you, on the third day when they were sore, they were not in any position to fight. So what'd they do? On the third day when they were sore, the two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brethren, took each man his sword and came upon the city boldly and slew all the males. And they slew Hamor and Shechem his son with the edge of the sword, and they took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went out. That's why God did not allow them ever to have the privilege of being a separate nation. And it does illustrate what happens to people when their anger gets the best of them and they do not exercise self-control, and then they carry it to its ultimate. Now, if you could go to a federal penitentiary today, and if you could look over the roster of the various crimes that these convicts are guilty of, and if you could find out the actual percentages of men who are in prisons and in the prison system for assault, felonious assault, you would probably be very shocked and surprised. What is felonious assault? It's when a man becomes angry at another man and he begins to beat him and do physical damage to the point that it is threatening death. That's regarded as a felonious assault. You'd look over the criminal records of some of these men and you would just see conviction after conviction of felonious assault. What are these? These are men who have never learned to control their emotions, and when they become angry, they resort to violence, bloodshed, and whatever's involved. They completely lose control of themselves, and they cannot be allowed to stay out in society because they're too dangerous. That's what happens when people do not control their emotions properly. Now, of course, many people are really not aware of what anger is. I'll give you a number of points here in a few moments here of what one can do to control anger, but I think I can say safely that there's a good percentage of people who become angry. They don't know what the emotion of anger is, and certainly they do not know what causes it. Let's go over to Proverbs, the 6th chapter. And in Proverbs, the 6th chapter, verse number 34, as I mentioned earlier, there's all kinds of nuances and shades of expression in this thing of anger. One is displaying anger. It's a degree of the same emotion, but one displays anger when he's mildly irritated. One is displaying anger when he is very irritated. One can display anger when he's disgusted at something or somebody else. Actually, as I'm going to point out here in just a moment, even jealousy is a form of anger. Envy is a form of anger. All of these negative emotions that tend to lead one in the wrong direction, in the wrong path, is generally caused by a nuance or a shade of this thing of anger. Being in general in an attitude of irritation toward other people all the time, it's nothing more than anger. Now, here's what it tells us here in Proverbs 6, verse number 34. For jealousy is the rage of man, therefore he will not spare in the day of vengeance. What is jealousy? It's a form of anger. It's usually precipitated because one is upset over something he wanted. In this case, if it is a loved one that he's losing, or someone's affections or attention he wants, he becomes angry because he is upset, and it involves selfishness. In other words, I think I can safely say that anybody, not everybody, because God's jealous, but it's never motivated from that purpose. And maybe in the case of human beings, it's not motivated always from a wrong purpose, because the person who may be getting involved in the wrong direction may be doing a great deal of damage and harm to himself and to his children, whatever the case may be. But generally speaking, jealousy is a form of selfishness. It doesn't always have to be, but it can be. All right then, how can one control and use anger? Remember, we're talking about how can we control anger. All right, first of all, let me say this, that you can never expect to ever control anger unless you know, first of all, what it is and you know what causes it. Remember, as I said a little bit earlier, it means it's an emotion, which really is nothing more than a form of energy. It is a form of energy that generates the impulse to fight or the impulse to destroy or kill. Now, it doesn't always have to, but it often leads to that. And there are some cases, you know, where people end up killing even though they may not be angry. I just think in terms, you know, of human beings. We're talking about other human beings. Nobody in his rightful mind would go out and kill another human being. But sometimes people are killed by accident. And in that case, you know, if you were careless and killed somebody, it wouldn't be generated by anger. It would be foolishness or thoughtlessness or an accident of some type or another, even though the other person may be killed. But we're talking in terms of an act of violence that's generated by an emotion. There will always be anger behind it. So we cannot expect to control anger unless we know what it is and what causes it. This is why I said a few minutes ago that if there's anything I want you to get out of this sermon, one of the two main points I want you to get out of this sermon is that the next time you become angry, then sit down and ask yourself why you became angry. Think it out. Ask yourself, what caused me to have this reaction? What was really behind it? And you'll invariably be able to pinpoint it. And then you'll be able to ask yourself the next question, was it a right response or was it a bad response? And you'll be able to answer that question too. And if you can learn to do that as a habit, it will help you a great deal in being able to control it at a future time. So as we read in Proverbs 14, verse number 29 here, this shows you how God evaluates the control of human emotions. So if you find somebody who's hot-headed, who's always blowing off steam, who is a person who has no control, you're really looking at a weak person. You're looking at a weak person. And I'm not talking about a person who has manifested this weakness without duress. I'm talking about somebody who has the proper control during a time of stress and duress. And a man who can control these emotions under a time of stress and duress, God looks upon him as a strong man. That's why you read here in Proverbs 14, verse number 29, he that is slow to wrath is of great understanding. Now this should tell us why it is important to understand what anger is and what causes it. Because it tells us very plainly here that the man that has great understanding has control of his wrath. He does not fly off the handle because he recognizes, first of all, what it is, he recognizes what it leads to, and thirdly, he recognizes what the cause of it is. And he's able to sit down and think it out in advance, and he doesn't let his emotions get the best of him. He exercises self-control. So it is absolutely imperative and necessary to ask oneself, always to ask oneself, why he became angry. Now that's one major point. The second major point I want you to get out of this sermon, I'm going to give you several other points before we conclude here, but the second main thing I want you to realize is this. Have any of you ever read the book How to Live 365 Days During the Year? All right. Now, you know that that book is a very fine book. It has a number of very fine suggestions and excellent points in it. There's only one thing wrong with it. It advocates a pick yourself up by your own bootstraps philosophy. In other words, what the author, of course, the author is not aware of an outside influence and strength and force that can enable man to control things much better. So he only approaches it from the human viewpoint, and that is, you make this constant effort yourself to bring these things under control. For some people, it works reasonably well. For most people, when they would see the repeated failures in their ability to conquer all of these problems that the author covers in the book, they would become frustrated and then probably angry. So you see, the second main point I want to emphasize is this. You cannot expect to ever overcome anger without the Spirit of God dwelling within you. And the more of God's Spirit you have, the more self-control you will have. That's why regular daily prayer is so absolutely essential to overcoming. And if your life is so disorganized that you can't get to bed on time and you can't get up in the morning and you don't have any time for study and prayer and you do not make prayer a regular part of your routine, you're already defeated before you start. You know, most people wouldn't think, they wouldn't take the time to think that even time itself is an element that God has given us to learn how to master and control. Do you control the use of your time, or do other factors and circumstances control you? And if you're controlling your time properly, then you're not negligent concerning that most important thing of your life, and that's your regular daily prayer and study. So I'm saying this, that unless you have a good measure of God's Holy Spirit, the case is already lost. Unless you happen to be the kind of a person who, through your background, maybe your nationality, your family makeup, the sum total of your human experiences, and the peaceful, calm environment in which you live, you are totally bovine in all your reactions. If you're that way, wonderful. But that's not the case with most of us. In fact, we live in a world that doesn't even allow that in most cases. So generally, we have to contend all the time with this element of anger and this human emotion of rage and wrath, as the Bible calls it. So let me just say, in turning over here to Romans, the fifth chapter, this is the second important point I want you to get. If you don't get anything else but these two points out of this sermon, I want you to get this one. And this is Romans 5, verse number 5. Because the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts by the Holy Spirit, which is given unto us. Now, this is not saying that we have perfect control over these emotions. This is not saying that we have mastered these things yet. But I can say this, that there isn't any hope to ever master them without God's Holy Spirit. And even though at times we get down on ourselves because we see these failures and these shortcomings, and we see our inability to always master these things the way we want to, just think of what you used to be like before you ever understood the truth and ever knew anything about it. So, you know, you have come a long way. It's just that we can never give up, and we've always got to be struggling and going forward, never defeat, and always staying close to God through prayer and study so we can learn to overcome these things properly. And so, without God's Holy Spirit, really, there isn't any chance for someone to gain control over his anger if he has a problem with the temper and with anger. There'll be no way he'll overcome it unless he has a lot of God's Spirit, and that's only going to come through study and through regular prayer on a daily basis. And he's drinking in of God's love, because as we read here, the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts by the Holy Spirit, which is given to us. So let's remember that. Now, those are two main things I want to emphasize. All right, now, let's get to another area here. I think all of us would agree that we're the end result of our environment, our background, our training, and the example we've seen of our parents. And even though our parents were not perfect, which one of us can say we're perfect also? We are not perfect. We have failures and shortcomings and faults. And sometimes those failures and shortcomings and faults are so pronounced, and sometimes they are so habitual as a day-by-day basis, they just go on all the time, that even though we're not aware of it, these things are rubbing off on our children. Now, what I'm saying is this, that if we want to see our children grow up to be mature and know how to handle their emotions properly, we've got to do two things. We've got to be training them the very best we can to our ability, and number two, we've got to be setting a good example. Now, if you're the kind of a person in your home that your temper is just hair-triggered, and you just blow off the handle at the slightest thing all the time, this is the way you can expect your children to be, because they're going to follow your example. So that's why it's important to try your very best to set a good example. I don't think any of us can say that we set perfect examples. I'll be the first one to say that I do not. But I would just say this, that I think any parent who is aware of the potential damage he can do to his child is certainly going to be aware of what a temper can lead to, and he's going to try his very best not to keep that up as a habit. Because children do pick up the habits they have from their parents. It's a known fact that where a boy has grown up in a home where his father had a hair-triggered temper and was always slugging or striking his mother, that when he becomes an adult and gets married, he will do exactly the same thing to his wife. I've tried to emphasize to my children, and I hope you do the same to yours, like if I were a young man and I were considering getting married, you know what I would do? I wouldn't even consider marriage until I got to know the parents of that girl and I saw what kind of a family life they had, what kind of a relationship existed within the home, whether the parents had a proper balance and there was a right relationship between the father and the mother, whether one of them was hot-headed, struck the mother, or what kind of a wife the woman was. And that would tell me more than any one other thing about what I could expect out of my prospective bride. I'm not saying it's always 100% cut and dried and always works out that way. It doesn't. But it would give me a very, very good indication of what I could expect. Because I cannot think of any factor that is more important in stabilizing a young couple when they get married and they start out a family of their own than the family example and the environment they grew up in as children. So that is a very important thing. And the example that is set by the parents is crucial in how those children are going to behave when they eventually mature and get out on their own. Whether they're going to act like mature adults with consideration and respect for one another, or whether they're always going to act in a sense of trying to put the other person down, exalting the self, being full of vanity, and never learning to cooperate, never making an effort to cooperate. And the world is full of people like that. They have never learned to be adults and to act like adults. Now, let's notice Proverbs 16, verse number 32. This is how important God says controlling this emotion of anger is. He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty. That's right. If you are slow to anger, God says you're better than a mighty man. Better than some of the world's great men. And he that rules his spirit is better, is what it's saying here, than he that takes a city. So you do have to learn to control your emotions. And if you don't control those emotions, from God's viewpoint, you're not a great person at all. You're really a weak person. A person who has no emotional control is a weak person. And there are people, really, the mental institutions are, maybe shouldn't say the word full, but there are any substantial number of people in mental institutions who are there because they have virtually no emotional control. They cannot cope with the realities of life because they cannot control their emotions. So it is important to learn that. All right, now, the human mind can be used in a positive way or it can be used in a negative way in conquering this thing of emotion. If one is aware of what causes anger, and if one is aware what anger is going to lead him into, then he can actually make an effort to counteract it before it gets out of hand. And that's what every human being should strive to do. Let's notice it here in Proverbs 17, verse number 14. What does it say here? The beginning of strife is as when one lets out water. In other words, you open the dike, you know, and the water starts to flow and the dam breaks through. It's too late, isn't it? So the solution to that problem is don't open the dike in the first place. So that's why it says here, therefore, leave off contention before it be meddled with. Now, what is this thing about human beings that always want to make them have the last word? Aren't your children that way? And how many parents are that way? I mean, you'll hear two children get to squabbling, and I mean, it'll go on endlessly because one of them wants the last word. Now, how important is the last word? You know, it's just like the other day, well, some time ago, I got a letter back from a fellow I'd written him two or three times. He was argumentative, very disrespectful. And I just decided not even to answer it anymore, so why? Let him have the last word. In the final analysis, God is going to be the one that has the last word anyway, so what difference does it make? So that's why it says here, if you can learn to see something in advance and you see something begin to develop, and you can recognize that your mind has the capability of working positively or negatively to your benefit, then what's the best thing to do? It says here, leave off contention before it be meddled with. Just back off and get away from it. It's not worth the price. But just like I told a lady here recently, you know, anytime I wanted to, if I'm walking down the road and I happen to reach a bridge, and the same time I get to that bridge, there's a skunk in the middle of it. Is there any doubt in my mind I can kick him off the bridge? Why, absolutely. I can kick him off that bridge anytime I want to, but I'll guarantee you one thing, I'm going to pay an awful high price. It isn't going to be worth it. So that's the way it is in a lot of these argumentations. You end up paying a high price for what? Was it worth it when you're done? So that's why you need to realize that you can use your mind profitably to your advantage, and you can cause the situation to improve, or on the other hand, you can not take advantage of it and do yourself irreparable harm. And just keep this fact in mind here as you read in Proverbs 25, verse number 28. He that has no rule over his spirit is like a city that is broken down and without walls. In other words, he has no defenses. He has nothing to make him intact. He has no security. And it's just like a fellow that we grew up with. I never did do this myself, but I had a friend that would do it all the time. In fact, it was the very same friend that asked that guy when we came out of that bar if he wanted to fight. But there was a friend in town, a friend of ours, who was half German and half Irish. Boy, and I'll tell you, you could not ask for a worse combination. He had the hot-headed temper of the Irish, and he had the stubbornness of the Germans. And you put those two together. And this friend of mine, he would see him around and he'd begin to egg him, and he knew that any time he egged him, within a minute, he'd have him so mad he'd be ready to fight. And he'd do it deliberately. Well, that's what this kid was. He was an example here of a man that had no rule over his spirit. He had no defenses. And so he could be in trouble in just a short order simply because he'd never learned to control his emotions. He'd have been a whole lot better off if, when that kid started doing that to him, just walked off and gone someplace. That would have been the Bible thing to do. All right, now, there is another factor that we need to realize. As I stated a little bit earlier here, we are all the product of our environment. So what we often do is we have a tendency to interpret things based on our past experiences and the way we grew up and our psychological makeup. And sometimes those interpretations are wrong. And if we are interpreting something wrongly and we take it the wrong way, then we can set up a situation where anger is going to get the best of us simply because we have never learned to place things in an objective manner. Now let me give you an example here. Proverbs 19, verse 11. Some of the other translations actually make this better than this. I'll read it as is in the King James Version here first, and then we'll go back and pick it up in the other translations. It says here, the discretion of a man defers his anger, and it is his glory to pass over a transgression. Now, have you ever had this happen to you? I know I've had it happen to me. Or somebody has said something to you, and you didn't quite hear it clearly, and you interpreted it the wrong way and got mad. Has that ever happened to you? Nah, that didn't happen to any of you, did it? What human being has it not happened to? It's just like this morning when we were going up to Portland, my daughter was driving and I noticed her hair wasn't curled. I said, why didn't you curl your hair? And she said, I got a cold last night. And I thought, well, what the world did a cold have to do with her hair being straight? And I looked at her kind of funny, and she looked at me and she said, I forgot to curl my hair last night. You see, that's what she'd said the first time, but I had misheard it and I interpreted it this crazy way and I was trying to figure out what she meant. Now, that wasn't any kind of a situation that led to anger or anything of that nature, but you can just think of similar circumstances. Many, many times when people have said something, you haven't quite heard it right, and so you've taken it the wrong way. Now, what is the failure that leads to that particular thing? The failure is the failure to communicate. So when you hear something and you think you've heard something the wrong way, take a moment of time and ask for the person to run it by again. Only ask in a nice way, don't ask in a challenging manner again because you're already mad. So just remember, it is important to learn to pass over a discretion. Now, as one of the other translations, I think it's a Moffat translation, translates this verse, Proverbs 19, verse 11, it says, I believe it's Moffat, it says, a prudent man ignores an insult. A prudent man ignores an insult. How many times have the people actually been killed because somebody refused to ignore an insult? You know, you stop and think about it, and is it really worth it? Absolutely not. So let's remember then, when you hear something and you think you are misinterpreting it, or you think you've heard something, you didn't quite get it right, or you think somebody's insulted you, don't jump to conclusions. They may not have intended that at all. Now, maturity, of course, plays an important part in one learning how to control his anger. Because usually, immature people are the ones who lack control. And the reason they lack control is that immature people, most of what they do, most of their actions and activities are predicated on the desire to get something or to have something for themselves. In other words, they're selfishly motivated. They want this, they want that. They want to take this, they want to have that, they want this given to them, and so forth. And so when those desires are frustrated, then they usually become angry. So just remember that a mature person, a person who has mature thinking, is not going to allow himself, even though he may have desires and things, he's not going to allow himself to be emotionally controlled and dominated by his emotions because he can't have his way. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Marriage is for mature adults. It is not for children. One of the unfortunate things in the world in which we live today is that most couples get married entirely too young, and certainly they're immature. And so they go through a number of years of agonizing experiences growing up before they learn to get along. Although the sad part about it is, in a lot of cases, they take the easy way out and get a divorce. So it is one of the tragedies of life. Let's remember this, that maturity is important. And as it tells us here in Ecclesiastes 7, verse number 9, be not hasty in your spirit to be angry. Usually people who become angry very rapidly are immature. All right. Be not hasty in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. So if you see somebody who has no control over his emotions, you're looking at an immature person. And if you have that problem, you need to recognize that immaturity, and you need to go to work on yourself to see that you learn proper control and exercise of this emotion. Proverbs 21, verse number 24. As I stated earlier, this thing of frustration, when people are frustrated, it usually is because they're upset because they can't have something. There's something they're after, some goal, something they want to do, something is thwarting their desires. That's predicated almost always upon selfishness. Now, the other aspect I said was that anger is often predicated on vanity. That is, the exalting of the ego and the necessity for one to think that he is important in his own mind. Well, you read here in Proverbs 21, verse number 24, "Proud and haughty scorner is his name who deals in proud wrath." What is that telling you? That's telling you that wrath can be precipitated by proudness or vanity. Remember, I said one of the causes of anger is this survival, what they call this survival syndrome. That is, where you are insulted. You feel you've been insulted. Your vanity's been hurt. You've lost this prestige you have in your own mind, this respect of this position or this office or this greatness or this acclaim or this ability or something of that nature that you think you really deserve. So anger is an immediate result. That's what it means when it says here, "Proud and haughty scorner is his name who deals in proud wrath." So you need to realize that anger is often motivated by just nothing more than the vanity within human nature. And your own human nature can be your own worst enemy. All right, now there's one other factor, one or two others here I want to cover because time is running out here. You know that anger can also be residual. It can be accumulative. Have you ever seen somebody that's in a wrong spirit towards somebody else, or is in a wrong or a bad attitude in general? What is a bad attitude? A bad attitude is residual anger. Why were there so many people in bad attitudes and bad spirits in the church from about 1973 on? Because they were upset and angry. They didn't know how to cope with the problem, and so this anger became residual within them, and they became in a state or a attitude of bitterness. They became bitter. Now, I'm not saying they didn't have reason to be upset. But why take their spite out on God? If they had loved God's truth, they would have held on to it regardless of what men or an organization did. So you see, to become bitter and upset and angry with God is absolutely inexcusable. If we'd have been looking to God the way we should have in the first place, we would have recognized the fallacy of human beings, all men. So just remember that anger can be accumulative, and it can build up into a wrong spirit and a wrong attitude and become a spirit of bitterness. Sometimes this happens between husbands and wives. They can't get along, they can't learn to cooperate, they can't learn to give and take, and they become critical of each other. This goes on and on, and they become more embittered and more embittered, and after a while, they just have nothing but a spirit of bitterness toward one another. Why? Because neither one of them learned to cope with what the problem really is. The proper exercise and control of their own emotions, and those emotions can be a wonderful aid and a help, and they can be the world's biggest curse if they're not properly controlled. So do not let anger become accumulative, and don't let it be something that's residual. It's like you read here in Proverbs 27, verse number 3, "A stone is heavy and sand is weighty." Now, in other words, what it's saying here, if you had to lug around a stone on your back or a big bag of sand, oh, what a burden that would become. It'd be an endless burden, all right? But a fool's wrath is heavier than them both. What if you had to live with somebody and they virtually had no control over their emotions? You talk about a burden to have to bear. Boy, I'll guarantee you one thing. If I were a young person thinking about marriage, I'd want to know whether or not this prospective bride or this prospective husband has a temper or not. And if they can control it. You know, everybody has a certain degree of temper, I suppose. Most people do. But do they control it? Are they the kind of a person who is understanding, who is compassionate, who is willing to give and take? Or are they one who's going to be critical? And all the time, they can only make little sharp, catty, critical remarks all the time, which is nothing more than a form of anger. That's all it is. It's a lack of emotional control. And when people live that as a lifestyle, what misery are they generating for others? And you'd be surprised how many marriages or one of the mates or maybe both of them have to suffer that out because they have not learned proper emotional control. Now, there is a right use of anger. I'm only going to read one text here or two very quickly. I'll just read this one here, I think, will be sufficient, then explain one or two things before I close here. And this is what you read in Ephesians 4, verse 26. I'm going to read this as the other translations show it should be understood in the Greek. In being angry, do not be sinning also. So the Bible shows, and we saw this in the example of Cain, that anger is a natural human emotion. But it's got to be controlled, and it can be used properly and wisely, and it doesn't have to be sin. Anytime it becomes sin, when a person becomes angry, what makes it sin is that it's a violation of the Ten Commandments, either in an attitude or an action expressed for disrespect and disobedience to God, or an attitude or an action that expresses disrespect toward one's fellow man. In other words, rudeness is a form of anger. Why? Because it lacks consideration and respect and love for the other person. And if people could just understand this, how would you like to be talked to all of your life? How would you like to be treated during your lifetime? Would you like to have somebody always be insulting and rude to you? Do you like people to be kind to you? Then why do you not make an effort to be kind in return? It's just that simple. See, anger becomes sin when it's a violation of God's law. When then is it not a violation of God's law? All right, it's not a violation of God's law if it's predicated on the same motivation God has. When God becomes angry, is there a single time that God ever became angry and it was predicated on the wrong thing? You see, you look at God and his relationship and his dealings with men, and he becomes angry. Why? Because he's hurt? No, because the people are being hurt. His anger is only expressed in their best interests and in doing good to them. It is never predicated and motivated on selfishness and vanity. Whereas in most cases, in human beings, when one becomes angry, it's predicated on vanity or selfishness. It doesn't have to be. It may not always be, but it often is. You take the example, most of you who are parents, you become angry with your children, probably, quite often. Now, is that wrong? Not necessarily. Maybe it is in some cases, but most of the time, probably not. Why? Because most of the time that you become angry at your children is why? It's because they're not obeying, they're not doing what they've been told, and they're not following through on what you expect of them. So really, what causes you to become angry with your children is frustration, because you see their failure to perform, which is intended for their best interest. That's often what happens. Because you can see what they're doing to themselves. Now, that kind of anger may be justified. But I would say that the anger that is predicated on a parent's vanity and he's mad because his child has disappointed him because he hasn't reached up to the standard he wants him to be is a wrong motivation. That's vanity. So you see, the only proper kind of emotional expression of anger that's proper is if it fits within the framework of God's law and is motivated by love. So let me just say two things, and in closing, the two things I really want to emphasize in this sermon, and that is that you can never expect to overcome anger unless you have a good measure of God's Spirit and love which comes from that Spirit. And number two, anytime you become angry, after the anger's passed, if you're able to do it, some people are able to do it while they're angry. But after the anger is passed, at least sit down and ask yourself, analyze why you became angry. And if you can do those things, you'll make great strides in overcoming and controlling anger.